We're four friends with hot takes on food media.
And we're here to review and recap all kinds of food shows in bite-sized seasons.
Plus, virtual potlucks, cooking adventures, and food memes.
Welcome to Pod Appetit Gourmet Takes.
Hi, I'm Amanda.
Hey, it's Justine.
And it's me, Meg.
Welcome to Pod Appetit Gourmet Takes. This season, we're covering Nadia Bakes. I just realized that rhymes. We are covering Nadia Bakes, where Nadia Hussein returns to baking, her happy place, and spotlights creative kindred spirits. But before we discuss what Nadia's baking, let's talk about what we've been cooking, eating, and getting up to in the kitchen. Meg, what have you been up to the past couple weeks?
Well, I've already made my potluck dish. I'm way ahead of the game. I had an opportunity to actually share something with a bunch of other people. So I'm like, this is the perfect opportunity to make something big and to not eat it all myself. And also, I am on the last day of a week-long all-potato diet.
What?
Please explain more.
Yes, is it healthy?
Because I'm an idiot. So I was reading this article that was not about potato diets at all, but it just happened to mention offhandedly about this guy in the 80s who was part of the National Potato Council who thought potatoes were getting a bad rap. So he decided to eat nothing but potatoes for 2 months. And I was like, well, that's weird and interesting. And so potatoes are a whole food. They have a lot of nutrients in them. They're pretty low in calories. Yes, they're starchy, but they actually have like a lot of good stuff for you. And the guy who ate nothing but potatoes for 2 months lost a lot of weight, and his cholesterol was better, and like his heart health was better. And I was like, maybe I'll try this for a week, not for 2 months. But it's literally nothing but potatoes, no cooking oil, no butter, no sour cream, just potatoes and salt and pepper. And it's boring AF, and I do not recommend it. But since I'm on my last day, I'm going to stick it through to the end.
How did you prepare the potatoes?
Mostly, I made large batches of mashed potatoes. So just boiled the potatoes and then mashed them and then made them a mashed potato consistency with water instead of any form of dairy. So it's really boring.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm sorry, that sounds really sad.
It is really sad. I'm not so happy right now. I don't know why I'm doing this to myself, but I thought I would share.
Wow.
I mean, this is the place to share that. At first I was like, oh, this sounds interesting. I can lose weight just eating potatoes, thinking of all the different things I can do. And then nope, there are not many things you can do on the potato.
The best I can figure is that why it leads to weight loss is because one large potato can be anywhere from about 200 to 300 calories, so not very many calories, but you would have to eat a lot to get your daily calorie intake. So you don't really have to limit as how many potatoes you eat. So I'm eating as many potatoes as I want, but man, it's really boring. So I'm just like, more potatoes.
So what's the thing you're most looking forward to eating after the potato diet?
This is going to sound really weird, but better potatoes. So like French fries or tater tots or hash browns, something that's been fried.
Boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew.
Yes, I am living the Samwise Gamgee life. But anyway, bottom line, I don't recommend. Don't do what I've done. It was a weird experiment, but yeah, that's what I've been doing. Justine, what about you? Not all potatoes, I assume.
No, dear God, that sounds terrible. I've made two vegan Indian dishes in the past few weeks, among other things, but two I wanted to highlight. I made a vegan pollock paneer, quote, with tofu. curried adzuki beans is what the recipe calls, but it's a red chori beans. I mean, I definitely wanted to dip into the red chori because we had them, and it is basically how I've made other dals in the past with the, you know, tomatoes, onions, all the spices that regularly exist, cumin powder, turmeric, you know. But it was really good. It was really hearty. The palak paneer was good. This recipe had you put curry powder and kala namak on the tofu before you fried it up. Kala namak is black salt, which infamously, as I've mentioned probably on this podcast before, smells like egg farts. Mm-hmm. Use it like sparingly because it is very much like if you have like one that's just like extra doused, you're just like, whoa, or egg farts in my mouth. Like, but it was good. And that was a nice change up to have. Like, normally I have like a bed of spinach and stuff, but just like to cook the spinach down and like blend it up with like an immersion blender with spices and stuff instead was great. And yeah, I mean, not too much going on with me besides that. I've been limiting gluten again from my diet because it's just not working for me right now. So I just bought also a bunch of gluten-free snacks from Thrive. Remember our old friends Thrive Market?
Thrive that gives you a bunch of collagen peptides.
Yeah. So I'm back on that train. That's it. I know I'm a little boring, but that's what I got.
So was the salt trying to emulate eggs in the dish? Because that's usually why you use it. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that leaves me, and I'm going to bring us back around to potatoes, guys. When you brought up potatoes, I was like, no way, that's my thing too. So I'm not on a potato diet, but the thing that I ate in the past few weeks, because again, boring old me, we do have a microwave now set up, so I can use a microwave. So that's
nice.
That's an addition to the new house saga. But at work, we had gotten a catered meal, and I had never heard of this before, and it was so amazing, and it was a baked potato bar.
Nice.
What?
So make your own baked potato?
Yeah. So, like, it had, like, just, like, the standard, like, potato that was baked, like, in its little foil thing.
Oh.
And then it had, there was, like, this tray, and you... It had bacon and cheese and chives and butter and sour cream and like all this stuff. And you could basically make your baked potato however you wanted.
That sounds good.
I don't know why my head just went into like a physical like potato shaped like a bar instead of like a bar in which things are placed upon and you have little fixins everywhere. I don't know.
Okay, and when you said bar, I couldn't decide if you meant, like, a cocktail bar or, like, a candy bar.
Ah, many, many definitions for bar. So, yes, more of the salad bar idea. Because there was also, like, a salad thing that you could get to, which I did. But I got to take home the leftovers of the baked potato bar, and because nobody else wanted them, and so that's all I ate last weekend was baked potatoes because that's what I had.
Ooh,
all aboard the potato train.
Yeah, no potato famine here.
No, but if anyone ever is like, you know what, I'm gonna bring a baked potato bar, would highly recommend. Never heard of it before, and I think it came from Jason's Deli, which is a local deli place around here. So, moving on the menu for today's episode, we have episode 5, Bakes to Share, and episode 6, Baking on a Budget. So, starting off with episode 5, Bakes to Share, Netflix describes it as sharing is caring, so pass the mini pecan pies, the speediest sweet, and a mango and black pepper crannikin. And then Ravneet Gill shows off her mille feuille to us. Cranberry and chili brioche, or as she also called it, a camembert and brioche wreath.
This looked really good to me. It just looked beautiful. It seemed like something that would be impressive if you shared it. And since it is a wreath shape and it has the cranberries in it, I think it would be a good thing to serve around the holidays, around mm-hmm. Christmas. I like camembert. I think it's kind of similar to brie in taste. I don't know. It's hard for me to describe cheese, but I like it. I like that it's so ooey and gooey.
I think I would eat this. Very British Isles cheese, like, because I had never had camembert until I went to Scotland for the first time. And then, like, literally every pub I went to had some form of camembert.
It's good.
I could definitely see LJ making this. I don't know why. Seems very her.
Does seem like something she'd enjoy.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a tear and share. As
as you said last episode, they love their tear and shares.
They definitely do. To me, this is a lot of chili flakes, but I'm a baby. And a lot of cheese, but also I'm a baby.
So you guys last episode were so concerned about that tea towel going into the oven. And I was wondering what you guys were thinking about the cheese basket, the little wooden cheese basket going into the oven.
I had concerns.
I honestly was like, huh, because I think, as I've mentioned before, I like to bake brie a lot for parties and stuff. And I always take it out of the little basket. And then I was thinking, wait, have I been able to leave it in the basket this whole time? That was where my brain went. I was like, oh my God, I've always taken it out and put it on like a little stone thing. And now I'm like, I could have had a better presentation.
What won't Nadia put in her oven is what I'm getting.
I would tell you to try it next time, Amanda, but your family has experienced 2 oven fires now, so I don't know if I want to encourage
that. That's true. I don't want to jinx anything there. So this looked absolutely delicious to me, but by the time she was like, and now we're proving it for a second time, I was like, so this will be a thing that I never make myself, and just hopefully someone else makes it and I get to eat it at some point or something similar.
Yeah, I won't reveal what I made for the potluck yet, but I had said in an earlier episode that my first impression upon seeing the recipes online was like, oh, this is really complicated. But then watching the show, I thought, oh, no, actually, this looks pretty easy. But I've reversed my opinion again, because once actually making the recipe, I was like, oh, this is way more involved than she makes it look on the show. So, you know, it's very tight editing. They make it look very easy, obviously, because they aren't going to want to present a recipe that seems unapproachable or difficult. So I understand why they're presenting it in this way, but it might be a little deceiving.
Yeah. Is this the one she put marmalade on?
It is. There are two marmalade ones. But yeah, she put some orange marmalade on top of the cheese in this one.
What did you think of that?
I thought that sounds great.
Okay.
Yeah, that didn't seem weird when she was like, oh, you must think this is crazy. Like, my family and I, like, we already do that around Christmas time. Is like, when we have a cheese plate, we already put like a little side of like either marmalade or some sort of like jam, and then also like a side of honey. And then we kind of put up, you get like the cracker and the cheese, and you put a little dollop of like the marmalade on. So I was like, what? This seems very normal to me.
Yeah, it's very, very common on a cheese board or a cheese plate to have some sort of jam or preserve. So it did not seem odd to me at all.
Cool. I did not grow up around such things. So I'm just like, well, okay.
So you were the one going, what is this?
What is this? For our holiday get-togethers, I think just my aunt would take out like deli slices and put them on a platter, and then pickles, and then like Swedish meatballs, anything you could put like a toothpick in.
Fair enough. That's more of what my dad's family did, I think. There were a lot of like gherkins and meats.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it looks very pretty. I personally has a lot of things in it that I wouldn't eat, but I think the look of it, the presentation of, very pretty.
Yeah, when this one, I thought, this is something I think Meg and I would both be able to eat. And then as it was going on, I was like, this is one that Justine's gonna not be able to talk a lot about because it has so many ingredients that I think it would be hard to substitute in.
Well, we're all on the same playing field as far as that. We only get to enjoy Nadia's bakes with our eyes at the moment.
True. Yeah. All right. Next up, she made little mini pecan pastries that she called mini pecan and cream pies.
That clotted cream again.
The to always the clotted cream.
I wrote that in my notes. Clotted cream returns.
This is not baking. Isn't this Nadia Bakes?
Oh, you're right. I hadn't noticed that when I was watching it, but yeah, she fries them. That's not baking.
It's not baking. I revolt. Oh. Flip over the table.
I guess she doesn't bake the Kranichan either. She even specifically says it's no bake. What is going on with this episode?
I know. Those are the problems I had with this episode. I was like, excuse me, bakes to share on Nadia Bakes and two of them? No baking?
Uh-oh. Nadia doesn't bake. False advertising.
No. I didn't think about... I kept thinking when she was doing the deep frying, I thought more about how on every cooking show, whenever they do deep frying, it's just like in a pot. Whereas like I own an actual deep fryer somewhere in a box that way. But, and I just wonder, like, did more people not own deep fryers and then instead do that? I don't know. I was just, that's what crossed my mind.
Is this a Midwest thing?
I feel like my parents had one that was a counter device just for frying, which they made just like taquitos in, and that's the only thing like they ever used it for, I think. So I think maybe once it broke or whatever, they never got it again. I don't ever think we had taquitos ever again.
Maybe this is a Midwest thing, because a lot of people I know have some kind of deep fryer. Like, and I had one in like a little one in college, and then when we got married, we were like excited because we could get a nice one.
Yeah. I just have a corn baller. JK. No, this is one of the recipes that I would happily, happily eat it, but deep frying kind of scares me a little bit because I don't have a deep fryer. And when you do it on the stovetop, I think that there's maybe a greater chance of splashing it around, you know, because you just have to improvise with a pot or whatever. And it uses a lot of oil, and it's always kind of inconvenient to dispose of oil properly.
Yeah.
But I would be very happy to eat these. I think that the recipe, if you look it up online, it calls them empanadas, which I think is a really easy way to describe this. And I was like, it's like a dessert empanada. Sounds good.
I think I 100% agree with you, Meg. I was like, ooh, flaky. This looks yummy. But we brought this up a number of times, like disposing of oil. When will they talk about that?
Yeah, true. I do like the idea of a hand pie, I guess you could also call these. Mm-hmm. I love eating stuff with my hands. I do like that she says the appeal of this is that you can make just like a whole bunch of them and have a pile of pies. And that's really visually appealing to me as well. Like if I walked into a party and there was a pile of pecan pie, I'd be so happy.
Like, and this is mine. Take the plate.
Well, exactly. Shove some in my pockets.
She specifically said, these are great at a party because no one's counting. And I was like, oh my God, that's literally been my wish at every party growing up, that no one would be counting what I was taking from like the, and then, but my mother always was, and she talked to me about it. So,
what? Oh, I like Nadia appealing in these episodes to people who just have the time to just cook and gab and bake for their friends that they come over and they're like, here, I've made this, I'm making this, I'm making food all the time.
Yeah, she shared a lot of anecdotes about family get-togethers and stuff in this episode, about gabbing with her sisters and about her granddad. So that was a nice little touch.
Yeah.
Well, when she brought the stool in, first of all, she's like whacking that dough and it just wouldn't, it was not moving at all. But yeah, then she brought in the stool, and I liked that it was that her dad had made the stool from wood from her grandfather's village. It just was very sweet that family was completely involved in like every step. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go back to the shape of these. I don't know if you guys remember, but at Easter, I got to make pierogies with my mother-in-law. And when she was doing like the shaping and like the filling of these, it was very, very similar. And I just thought about how like almost every culture has some sort of little pocket pastry or finger dumpling or whatever, that it's very similar I mean, we did it all by hand instead of the crimping, but it reminded me of, you don't want to overfill the pierogi because then it'll burst and everything like that. Next up, Nadia is actually baking again. She is making a chocolate and lime croissant pudding. As we go back into, what is a pudding?
When this dish first started, I was like, oh, this seems good. And then as it went on and on, I was more and more against it.
I totally agree. I have the exact same response. I was like, what is going on? But at the same time, I was intrigued the whole time. I was like, this seems really weird, but I also really want to try it.
So... okay, this one definitely intrigued me. First of all, I did not know lime marmalade was a thing, and now I really want to have it because I love limes.
I do too. I really want to try some.
That just made me so excited, and then also made me wonder, why did she not specify what kind of marmalade she used with the camembert earlier? But that's a different thing altogether. So one of my questions was, and here's again three Americans going, huh? But... she kept talking about, oh, you know, that bread and butter pudding. And I'm like, is bread and butter pudding a very common thing?
That was another thing I wrote in my notes with just several question marks after it. But I did not end up Googling it. But it must be something common, a common touch point for English folks. Because, yeah, she was like, it's like a bread and butter pudding. So it must mean something to not us.
She is obsessed with bread and butter.
Yeah, so... this seems more like a pudding to me, according to what Nadia has said a pudding is, because just as a quick refresher, she said that a pudding is something you eat with a spoon and that comes with custard. And even though it doesn't technically have custard, she said that the vanilla ice cream, it's essentially, it is a custard really, except frozen. But then, you know, she had already softened it and it gets cooked in the oven anyway, so it's not even really... the ice cream form factor anymore. So I guess we can consider that custard.
Dude, I hate that. Yeah. When she put the ice cream in the oven, I'm like, I hate this so much. I don't know what it is. I just hate it.
Okay, I feel like one of us needs to make this for the pot.
Oh, God. Not it. Not it.
I mean, I will admit, I was thinking, because she's talking about how, oh, some people it brings them joy to have, like, 600 ingredients and all of this stuff, and I was like, ah, Meg. And then she was like, and some people just a few great ingredients that brings them joy, and I was like, yep, that's me, just a few ingredients.
Seems really simple, because you start with already made croissants and you just slice them up. The ice cream's already made, the marmalade's already made. It's basically just assembling a lot of pre-made things and throwing in the oven together.
That sounds like my kind of thing.
Do it. Find some lime marmalade and tell us all about it.
Justine, you look, I feel like even if I did make this for the potluck and it ended up good, you would just be like, no.
I don't, just the, I don't know. I can't. Just the look of it. The look of the lime marmalade? I'm just too... It's out of my comfort zone. I'm sorry.
It seems like incredibly firm marmalade. I thought it was Jell-O when I first saw the bowl. And then she was like, this is marmalade. And I was like, it is.
I do feel like if nothing else, I'm going to have to see if I can find lime marmalade somewhere here. Because that just... I just want that in general. It made me so happy. this is not going to be Justine's favorite episode when we do our wrap up in a few episodes.
True.
And then the last quote unquote bake that Nadia does in this episode.
Controversy.
Is the mango and black pepper cranakin, or she also calls it her mango and cornflake. And she goes outside to quote unquote cook.
This felt very contrived to me. I thought, no one's going to bring a stovetop outside to make this. There's no reason to make this recipe outside. Just make it inside and then go enjoy it outside.
Especially because I feel like you'd want to chill so much of what you're making.
Oh, for sure. Like the whipped cream filling or whatever it was. Yeah.
I thought it was interesting. It's just basically what a mango trifle with cornflakes
Yeah, that's what it seemed to be.
I thought it sounded good. It's, again, one of those recipes where she thinks about contrast. So you've got the sweetness and then the spiciness of the black pepper. Not that black pepper is very spicy, but, you know, black pepper is usually a savory flavor. So it's kind of interesting to have it in a dessert. And then it's got the crunchy cornflakes along with the soft cream and the juicy mango. I would be interested to make this. And I just like cornflakes in a dessert. It brings an interesting savoriness, but cornflakes themselves are still pretty sweet, so I think that they work well in desserts.
I'd try it. I don't know why, like, well, when I watched it and wrote in my notes, I was like, pass, but now I'm thinking about it, I'm like, I'd try it.
Yeah, watching it, I mostly, on this one, was just like, damn, I really want something mango. Like, I want some sort of mango pudding in the way of, like, more of an actual, like, American pudding or something.
Yeah, she has a lot of mango recipes, and I come away from this show wanting mango a lot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, how do you climb a mango tree with your feet?
No idea.
Yeah, she said just her feet, and I was like, huh? I can't imagine climbing a tree with only your feet.
I guess it's the idea that, like, I kept thinking a child would fall a lot trying to attempt that. But, I mean, your arms have to be involved somehow.
You would think.
You can't just, like, walk up a tree.
Yeah, well, are those kinds of trees, like, shaped, like, sideways, though, maybe? I don't know.
We just need to go to one of those gab seshes at her house and get all the details.
Yeah, we need to gab.
Sort of related. I did really like her nail polish in this episode.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, I think in both of these episodes, she had a good nail polish game going.
And sweater game.
Mm. Yes. One thing that I thought was kind of sad is it did not seem like there were enough individual cups for the whole crew on this one.
Maybe there were some behind the scenes. Hopefully.
Hopefully. And then for the guest baker, we had Ravneet Gill, who is a pastry specialist and food writer, and she made some millefeuille.
Millefeuille. I did not attempt to spell.
I paused.
So puff pastry nature. With a bunch of layers, basically, is the TLDR for millefeuille, I believe.
I couldn't really get a grasp of, like, who she was, because normally they show the home bakers at home and the professional chefs in a professional environment. So I thought she was a home baker until she said she was a pastry chef.
Yeah. And it seems like she is a pastry chef at restaurants. So I wonder if this was, because this was filmed during lockdown, maybe she was doing more things from home? Or maybe they couldn't get the permits to have the cameras in whatever restaurant she's currently working at, since it doesn't seem like she's the owner of a restaurant.
Yeah, maybe the restaurant was closed for COVID reasons. It looks good, the recipe. It's one of those finicky pastries where you need to make all the laminated layers with all the butter and keep it cold, and it's kind of finicky. Not something I'm likely to make myself, but it looked very lovely with the chocolate and vanilla ganache. Mm-hmm. Alternating in between the layers.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how the special guests they had in this episode and next episode, like, how they had to kind of shoehorn them into the theme of the episode.
Yeah. Because
I don't know if I would really consider this a bake to share.
No, I don't think I would either.
No, it seemed more because it was put in between the pecan pastries and the croissant pudding, and I feel like it was like, oh, this pecan pie, we're gonna call it a pastry, and here's a pastry chef. Like, it was kind of like, there's the link, there's the link. And she cut it into three parts.
She, like, I believe it was the chocolatier, started with a different background, so she went from studying psychology to mm-hmm. baking, mm-hmm. and I think it was the chocolatier. He said he went from maths to chocolate. So it's interesting to have these people who mm-hmm. found their passion for baking maybe a little bit later in life than some other folks.
I wanted to see her eat it. I kind of just wanted to see how it was eaten.
It does seem like something that would be messy to eat because that pastry mm-hmm. is very crunchy and obviously the filling is just like super soft. So I feel like it's one of those things where you'd take one bite and it would just sort of smoosh down and out.
Yeah. It looked pretty, and that was the main thing I think Nadia said on the way back, like, you know, going back to her kitchen, her voiceover was like, oh, that looks stunning or something. Like, just, at least she didn't try to say that she had eaten it, because clearly she didn't.
Nobody ate it. They then threw it in the trash right after.
Well, that's all for the first episode, Bakes to Share. We will be right back with Baking on a Budget. And we're back! Let's do some baking on a budget, which I have questions about in this episode.
So many questions.
Yeah, especially for Americans. So Netflix describes this one as save your funds, but don't skimp on flavor. Try Nadia's rhubarb kisses, onion pretzels, and chocolate fondant. And then baker Richard Bertinet shares his cinnamon buns. So yes, we start off with a leftover quiche or a potato rosti quiche, mm-hmm. which when she said this was going to be made from leftovers, I thought it would actually be made from leftovers. And it was not.
I think she was implying that she had a couple of spare potatoes laying around. I think that's where the leftover idea comes in.
Okay.
I like the idea that she says to never throw anything away and to keep all these odds and ends and use them for something. But I think that we're all kind of similar in that at least I have trouble thinking of dishes to make with just random bits of ingredients laying around. So while I like the concept, I don't know if it's an easy thing for me to do.
I do think parts of this I enjoyed. The part where she was talking about how, you know, quiche is basically a custard but without the sugar. Like,
mm-hmm. always a custard.
Yeah, I'd never thought of it in that way before. I liked that she used paprika. I love some paprika.
Yeah, I thought you'd be all about this quiche, Amanda.
I do think out of all of the recipes in this one, this is probably the one I liked the best. I wasn't like stunned by it. You know what I think it is the sweet potatoes, because I'm not wild about sweet potatoes.
I think you could easily make the crust with just white potatoes. I think it would still turn out pretty much the
same. That's what I was thinking, is if I did something like this, I'd probably just use white potato and not sweet potato. Because I talked about this with some friends the other night, as somebody had leftover sweet potato fries, and I was like, nah, I'm good. And they're like, you don't like these? And I was like, I don't like that it's a potato that's lying to me. Because it says it's sweet, and I feel like...
Oh, my God. Get out of here, Amanda. Get out. Sweet potatoes are so good, and I feel they are the superior potatoes, and they are better for you.
They are better for you.
That's fair. I have sweet potato issues. It's okay. It's
all right. Go to your therapist and work this out. And then go to-
Dear Dr. Lily, we need to discuss my sweet potato issues. She'll be like, oh, it's not about your family? Good.
The word potato has lost all meaning. Yeah. We've said it so many times. Potato.
I did have to look up what a rosti is because she didn't explain. It's a, Swedish dish? It's hash browns. I mean, it's not hash browns, but I mean, as a dumb American, I'm just going to call it hash browns.
Yeah, so while this didn't use leftovers and maybe the scents you were expecting, Amanda, I did like that, at least for me, this seems like mostly ingredients I would probably have on hand, like the potatoes, mm-hmm. the seasonings she used are paprika, onion powder, garlic powder. Those are all things I have in my cupboards.
Yeah.
Eggs, cheese, I almost always have some form of cheese. I don't really have chives hanging around all the time, but for the most part, I feel like this would be an easy recipe to put together. Wouldn't it be a very big shopping list?
I do feel like the chives could be optional too. Like, I feel like it's there for, I mean, yeah, the taste, but also the color. And if you didn't have it, it wouldn't make it not a quiche or something.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
I think you could also sub it out for whatever herb you got.
Yeah, or if you had some green onions laying around, something like that. Mm-hmm.
There we go. There we go.
All right, next up, we have onion pretzels, which instantly I checked out on. So you guys have that, because I don't like onions enough or pretzels enough for this to be a thing I would eat.
Oh, this looked so good to me.
It looked good. I wrote, pretzels are recent? Get this bitch an Auntie Anne's.
Maybe they don't have Auntie M's in London.
Yeah, she was just like, oh, they're just like a recent thing in shopping. And I'm like, okay.
That's been a shopping mall staple for ages over here in the States. I love onions, on the other hand. I love pretzels. I especially love fried onions. The idea of putting fried onions inside of the pretzel dough sounds so good to me. I would be really tempted to make these. I love pretzels. I love bagels. I like the idea of boiling something in the baking soda bath before baking. I've never done that before, but of course that's what gives it the chewy, shiny exterior. I think it would be a fun challenge.
Yeah, I agree. I think these look good. I'm all about crispy fried onions and doubling that. it's an interesting topping, though, she added, too, with the paprika and more onion.
Yeah, more onion.
Very interesting. I don't think I've seen that very often. I feel like I'm very used to, like, the sweet version of pretzels, too, over here. Like cinnamon pretzels. You either get like pretzels stuffed with something, sweet pretzels, pretzels and mustard.
I did think it was interesting that she buttered her pretzel. I feel like that is not something.
What?
I've definitely prepared a pretzel where I've brushed melted butter on the top and then put the salt on top of the melted butter and then thrown that in the oven as a finishing touch. But I don't think I would put butter straight on the pretzel either, Amanda, like you're talking about she does in the episode.
Yeah, because she just, like, pulls it apart and then butters it like a roll. And I was
like it's a roll or a piece of bread or something.
I don't think British people have ever seen pretzels before, so I'm kidding.
I was like, where's, like, the cheese or the mustard or... they're, like, I don't know. They're just, like, a lot of other, like, toppings and dips and things I would think of before butter on a pretzel.
Well, also, them being so close to, like, Germany, what's the deal?
I don't know. I was very confused. I have a question for you, Meg, because I know you're interested in this. When, if you were to do the, like, bicarbonate boil thing, would you put more than one in at a time, or would you focus on one because it's not supposed to be more than a few seconds?
Well, I think that it'd probably be best to do one at a time, not only because it's time sensitive, like you mentioned, but also because if you add too many at once, it can bring the temperature down, and then that can affect the rest of them or affect your cooking time. So I don't know if that would apply here. I don't know if the ratio of pretzel to water would be enough to affect the temperature, but I think I'd probably do what the recipe tells me to do.
And that was just something I was thinking about when she had like two or three in at a time and then was like, oh, it's only this long. And I was like, how do you know which one you put in first?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. So I don't usually have much of an opinion about the video editing, unlike our video editor, Justine. But I was going to ask you, Justine, I did not like part of the editing in here because she was showing how to tie the pretzel and then they cut away. And I was like, well, you went away from the important bit.
Yep, they did that.
I need to know how to make that pretzel knot. How am I gonna know?
I feel like also the way she did it, she was also, maybe they cut away because she was like trying to figure out how to remember to do it.
Ah.
they needed another take.
Yeah.
She had enough. She's doing 12. They had 12 tries to film it.
I don't know.
All right. Next, we have... Sorry, what? Am I doing something wrong?
No. I just looked at what we're talking about next.
So next we have rhubarb and custard kisses. And my first note was, vanilla pods are not cheap.
That was my first note, too. I'm like, baking on a budget, you tell us to use an ingredient that costs at least $10 for one vanilla pod.
And then she's like, well, you can use vanilla essence if you want. And I'm like, even that is not cheap. Like, nothing about vanilla is really that cheap.
Seriously, one vanilla bean pod, when I splurged and bought them, I believe it was $10 or $11 just for one pod. It's insane.
That is not a budget. Not a budget.
Yeah. Just throw some saffron in here, too.
Right? Maybe some edible gold on top.
Yeah.
And then the other, I mean, and then this would be, I guess, more specifically if you were baking this in the U.S., is what the hell is custard powder? That would be a specialty item.
It's for custard emergencies, Amanda.
Oh, I forgot about my custard emergencies I have all the time. And then the only thing rhubarb in this whole thing are the sweets. And I was like, rhubarb and custard sweets, also a specialty item. And this should not be called a rhubarb kiss because there's no actual rhubarb in it.
Yeah.
I was so, like, upset.
Yeah,
with this.
Exactly. I got to the end. I was just like, wait, where's the rhubarb? Is it just in the freaking it's a vanilla cookie.
I know. At first I thought, wait, is the only thing rhubarb the pink color? And then they finally added the candy, but that's barely rhubarb. No, that doesn't count.
Yeah, and what do you do if you can't find it? You don't have it.
This bake reminded me of her season of Bake Off when, like, her one misstep was when she did the crazy food coloring and, like, the bubblegum flavoring for something, and Paul Hollywood was just like, no. Adults don't want to eat this.
Yeah, I'm not lining up to make this recipe.
No, and I have been looking at it for a while because it looks so cute.
It's very cute.
But it just got so many, like, dead ends. I can't.
I think you could achieve the same cuteness level and completely alter the recipe to something else. Like,
yeah, because the cuteness is in how it looks, right? So you've got the cute pink and yellow. It's piped. It's sandwiched. I agree. I think you can make totally different flavors and still achieve the same cuteness factor.
Yeah. Like, I almost feel like you could take the flavors from her strawberry shortcake cupcakes from, like, the first episode and then put that into this instead and just, like, make the little kiss cookies.
They were really cute. She said they looked like jewels, and I thought that was a really cute way to describe it. I liked that her sweater for this episode was the rhubarb custard colors. It was pink and yellow. And then she had that bright pink, or bright yellow, excuse me, nail polish to match. So I liked the look of everything. I will say I did also like the little hack she had to make uniform cookies. So she dipped the cookie cutter in the flour, and then she tapped that onto the baking tray. So you had these nice little flower outlines. I thought that was really clever. I'd never seen that before.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised she just didn't pull out one of those Silpats that's already marked for making macarons. And
that would have worked too.
But since we're baking on a budget,
yeah,
we spent all our money
also
on...
not budget friendly.
We spent all our money on the vanilla already. So
the vanilla and then importing custard powder and rhubarb sweets.
Yeah, this would be a particularly expensive recipe for Americans to make.
Yeah.
Not easy to get our hands on those things.
I can't get over custard powder. Just like, oh, you know that custard powder you have hanging around.
This is exactly what I told you guys about her first show, Nadia's Time to Eat. It was like this all the time.
Then moving on to other things that I thought I might like and then was like, oh, her sherry chocolate fondant.
What is this?
I wrote literally thinking this just looks like an underbaked brownie.
Yes.
That's
I called it a wet
exact
brownie.
Exact words. Exact words in my notes. Underbaked brownie.
Wet brownie.
Wet brownie.
Like, Jeremy and I ordered pizza last night, and we got, he convinced me to get, like, the lava cake that they had from Domino's. And I was like, eh. And then, but it actually, surprisingly, had a firm outside and then a molten inside. And it was quite good. And I was, he shamed me and was like, you said this would be bad. And it wasn't. And props to Domino's. You did a good job. But.
Domino's so, pastry chefs.
World-renowned pastry chefs. Domino's pizza. And so I was like, okay, so maybe this is kind of like that lava cake kind of thing. And then the whole time I was just like, no, I'm pretty sure what I ate at Domino's was better than whatever this underbaked brownie is.
Yeah, because the interesting thing about lava cakes is that it's just the center that's lava-y. But this whole thing is just, it's just all wet. And I was also thrown off, as I'm sure you guys were, by the word fondant because...
Yes.
Yeah, because fondant... To me, I think of that stuff you use for decorating cakes, you know, the marshmallow fondant, the sugar fondant that you roll out in a sheet and put over a cake. So I did look this one up, and Wikipedia just defines this type of fondant as a soft-centered chocolate cake. So
I hate it.
Yeah, I don't like it either.
At that temperature for that long, you think all the egg stuff is fine?
I don't know.
Oh, I'm sure it's fine.
Okay.
I mean, I feel like the fear over raw eggs is blown out of proportion, let's just say. I don't want anyone to get salmonella, obviously, but who doesn't eat a little bit of raw cookie dough? I mean, come on.
Well,
right,
true.
You're right. It just, she just like puts it in her mouth. I'm like, you're eating cake batter. That's what you're doing.
That's the thing. I feel like this would be good if it was like, I don't know, a dipping sauce for something else. Like maybe get a biscotti and dip it in there.
Yeah. If this were, because like the camembert thing in the previous episode, she called like her cheesy fondue. Yeah. If this were like more of a chocolatey fondue kind of thing.
I definitely had fondue in my head because it just sounds similar to the word fondant. So the whole time I was thinking, maybe this is more like a chocolate fondue. So I do think I got stuck on that idea.
I was like, yeah, like Amanda, like, okay, so is this like the British version of chocolate lava cake? But it was not. I think the whole time you're watching it, you're just figuring out what the heck it is. And then it gets to the end and you're like, oh.
Okay. So in this episode, at you know, she introduces at the beginning and I was like, oh, onion pretzels are going to be my least favorite thing here because I don't really like onions. And it depends on the pretzel. Like I like soft pretzels, but only certain ones and definitely not an onion one. And then this ended up being my least favorite of all of the bakes in this because I felt like at least with the pretzel one, there were some interesting things like the bicarbonate boiling and the way, I don't know, just there was something interesting about the baking itself of the pretzels, whereas this, it wasn't. Like as much as I love those oven shots, I was just like, I don't even care about this one.
I don't see the appeal either. I'm not going to be making this one.
Oh, sorry, Nadia.
She's enthusiastic about it.
I think this is maybe our least favorite episode so far.
Well, and so weirdly enough, the part of the episode that I usually dislike the most when it cuts over to the UK baker somewhere else, this time we had Richard Bertinet in Bath. I loved how there were so many B's. It was like, Richard Bertinet from Bath, and he is a bread baker, and he is making cinnamon buns. So we went and visited him, and I mean, he did not share his recipe, obviously. Like, none of them are really sharing their full recipes. But I liked the way that he showed that the cinnamon bun looks really fancy, but basically all he did was just like braid it and then put it in a circle. And that in that way, something that's pretty simple if you know how to braid. So most people who have ever had longer hair at some point, and then just putting that in a thing. Like, I enjoyed that part, and I wanted to share that with my sister's boyfriend, who loves cinnamon rolls. And I thought, okay, there's a tip I can share with Seth, but...
Yeah, I agree. Good. If these segments had, like, here's a tip I would share, like, that sort of vibe to it, mm-hmm. I'm all for those. I'm all for that in a segment.
I liked this segment a lot as well. I thought the cinnamon buns looked really delicious. Mm-hmm. I did see if there was a recipe online, and there is. So if you want to make this, it is readily available. And like you were saying, Amanda, it looks beautiful and seems surprisingly simple to get that really impressive final effect. And I love me a good cinnamon roll. This just looked delightful.
Best thing in the episode.
I mean, of all the recipes, it might be the one I'm most likely to make. Although the quiche did look good. And Lord knows I have leftover potatoes.
Oh my God, potatoes again.
Hey, at least it's not just a plain mashed potato with salt and pepper.
I don't know how you did that.
Well, that's all we have for Nadia Bakes this episode. Now we're going to head over and see what is on the back burner. So on the back burner today, first up, we have Molly is making a podcast. It is called The Sandwich Universe, and it is part of the Food 52 Podcast Network. And I guess I should say it's Molly Baz.
Molly Baz.
I just assume anyone who's listening just knows Molly, our friend Molly, you know.
Our friend Molly.
Yeah, so it's all about sandwiches, as one might have guessed. And also, if you're a patron of hers, if you're a subscriber on her Patreon, she was asking for questions. She put a call out for questions about specific sandwiches. And if you had a question, you might just get to go on the podcast with her to talk about it. So if anyone's interested in that and you're a supporter of her Patreon, you might want to check it out.
Yeah, this definitely seems like the perfect podcast for Molly and her, quote, Sandopod dreams.
Also, I feel like this was the first time most of us knew there was a Food 52 podcast network.
Yep. Oh, you know what? It just brought back the memory now, the Sandopod podcast, of when she was on the eat it all eat everything with I forget what the name of the
Delaney?
Show
I'm just like, or was it with her?
Oh yeah, with Delaney. It was Delaney. With somebody.
Yeah, Delaney.
I was like, I've blocked it so much out of my mind. She loves eating sandwiches and making sure sandwiches. Does.
Yeah, that starts August 3rd, and Food 52, if you're listening, we'd love to be a part of your network.
Yeah, we also have a food podcast, and sometimes we cover your shows, and maybe you could pay us, and we'll keep doing that.
So basically, hit us up. Hi, Food 52, come talk to us.
Yeah.
And then another really fun thing for the back burner this week is Kim Joy has a board game that she's making. Well, more of a card game. Mm-hmm. It is a cooperative baking card game, and it is called Kim Joy's Magic Bakery.
I want it.
I know, it looks so cute.
I want it.
I love just like the illustrations on the front of the box. Like, you have a little Kim Joy, and she's so cute, and there's a panda, and there's a cat, and a unicorn. It's just great.
I think we should get it and figure out a way for all of us to play it remotely together.
Yes. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, let's do it.
The free pin, though, is sold out. So
no.
You can only pre-order right now, but the first 250 orders got the free pin, so she's at least gotten 250 pre-orders, which is great.
Go Kim Joy.
Yeah, I want it. I've played similar sort of card games to this, like Tea Dragon Society. Yeah, I love it. It's totally in my wheelhouse. I will get it at some point.
I like collaborative card games a lot because they're usually really fast to learn. Mm-hmm. And I'm a very competitive person, so sometimes I need to just chill and play a collaborative game instead.
All right, guys. We've got some shout-outs. So we would like to thank the Edmonton Tourist for writing into us, being the honorary LJ and answering questions for us about brown sauce.
Brown sauce. There it is.
She sent us a picture of the HP sauce and said, it's nothing like ketchup, more like Heinz 57, but darker with more umami.
And LJ also told us that HP stands for Houses of Parliament, which is why there is a picture of the Houses of Parliament on their label.
Which makes
sense. So you know it's official.
Because HP, I always think Harry Potter, and I was like, Harry Potter Hewlett brown Packard sauce?
Bringing you the brown sauce.
Gross. That's going to be my potluck this year, making brown sauce. Just take every condiment in my fridge and put it together in a bowl.
Yeah, and LJ let us know as her pals. She's not huge on brown sauce either. So the brown sauce controversy shall continue.
Our coverage on brown sauce 2021.
And then also, shout out to Nerdified Jen on Instagram, aka Meg's co-host.
Yes, she's my co-host on the Endorsement podcast. Check it out.
Yeah.
And she shared a very fun fact with us. She said, geologically, a cobble is just a general term for a medium-sized rock between pebble and boulder in size.
Wow.
So I have to stop thinking cobbles have anything to do with shoes.
This tidbit reminded me of that meme of a large boulder the size of a small boulder blocking the highway. Do you guys remember this?
Yes. Yes, Amanda, you are scientifically wrong.
Yes. As proved by an archaeologist. So.
Yep. Thanks, Jen.
Thank you. Honestly, thank you to both Edmonton Tourist and Jen for, like, bringing us the food facts that we just don't know. It's awesome. Well, thank you to everybody who has gotten in touch with us on social media and sharing what you thought of our episodes. We don't have a review to share this week, but please let us know what you think about the show. You can do so by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts and or writing us an email or, you know, just contacting us on social media in general. So we appreciate all of you for listening. Thank you for joining us this week. And then next time on the podcast, we're already wrapping up the show. It's only 8 episodes. So we've got the last 2 episodes of Nadia Bakes, Biscuits and Bites, and Celebration Bakes.
I'm already panicking because I'm like, what are we watching next?
I know, we don't know yet.
Thanks for listening to Pot Appetit Gourmet Takes.
We'd love to hear from you, so find us on Twitter and Instagram at pod_appetit.
And on Facebook at Pod Appetit Podcast.
You can also email us at podappetitpodcast@gmail.com and find all of our episodes on our website, podappetitpodcast.com.
This wasn't your typical case. What really got me were the inconsistencies, the lies, the malice. The deeper I dove in, the more questions I had. Like, how the F did we elect Trump? We talk about this and more on our podcast, Feminists Without Mystique, where we discuss politics, pop culture, and sex. Because what's spookier than the attempted murder of our democracy?